May begin when ready, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Catherine Donahue from the Fairfax Public Defender's Office. On behalf of person Jara Travisano, I would ask this court to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Travisano asked this court to vacate his sentence and remand to the trial court for resentencing due to the trial court imposing an illegal sentence. First, Your Honors, Mr. Travisano was not eligible for commitment because he was 18 years old when he was adjudicated delinquent and sentenced. It is explicitly stated in Virginia Code Section 16.1.228 that a juvenile, a child, or a minor is a person less than 18 years of age. And an adult is defined as a person 18 years of age or older.
But a delinquent child elsewhere is defined as an adult who committed an offense before reaching the age of majority. Doesn't that work here?
It is correct that the definitional statute includes a separate definition for delinquent child. But what's important to consider is the term of art delinquent child is not used in any of the commitment statutes. In fact, the legislature saw fit to separately define adult, juvenile, and minor child in the section, and then separately define delinquent child. And delinquent child is not the equivalent of a juvenile found to be delinquent or a juvenile adjudicated delinquent. And we can look to case law that speaks about statutory interpretation, and we know from the Clarfeld versus Salisbury case that when the General Assembly uses two different terms in the same act, it is presumed to mean two different things. And then again, from the City of Virginia Beach versus ESG Enterprises, it is well settled that when analyzing a statute, we must assume that, quote, the legislature chose with care the words it used when it enacted the relevant statute, and we are bound by those words as we interpret the statute. Here, had the legislature intended to use the definition for delinquent child in any of the commitment statutes, it could have.
But if we take a look at the Epps case, and I appreciate your citation to that premise, also says it is one of the fundamental rules of construction of statutes that the intention of the legislature is to be gathered from a view of the whole and every word and every part of the statute taken and compared together, giving to every word and every part of the statute its meaning, unless it plainly appears that they were used in some other sense. If the intention of the legislature can be thus discovered, it is not permissible to add to or subtract from the words used in the statute. So doesn't that stand for the premise that we're essentially supposed to take a look at the statutes and find a way to make them read in concert?
I think first we need to look at whether the plain language is unambiguous or not. And it's our contention that before we start talking about the legislative intent, that the plain language of the statutes are unambiguous. Reading 16.1-228 and the definitions that apply to juvenile and adult in conjunction with the commitment statutes that talk about eligibility, duration, and review, it's clear that unambiguously the plain language dictates that only a juvenile who is adjudicated delinquent is eligible for commitment. When we talk about whether or not the General Assembly intended a different result, I would point the court to the Baker opinion. And I know that there were two Baker opinions cited in my brief, so I'll point the court to 28 Virginia App 306, a 1998 case from this court where it interpreted the plain language of a statute relating to notice requirements.
Making sure that a parent or a guardian was present during the course of litigation.
Exactly, and the plain language of the statute stated parents, plural. And it was found that the juvenile court did not follow proper procedure by notifying both parents, and therefore this court, in applying the plain language, found that the circuit court lacked jurisdiction over the case.
But in Baker, there wasn't any suggestion that there was any ambiguity in two statutes that were supposedly there to accomplish similar objectives. Basically, in Baker, as I recall Baker, because it was a really big deal when it came out, Baker said, look, the statute says parents, there's no way we can get around it. It says parents, and we cannot add to, subtract, or delete, or modify what it says, particularly in a statute, and it's not a matter of harmonizing it with another statute. It says parents. That's the end of the inquiry.
And again, I don't believe in this case that we need to look at the word delinquent child and rewrite the commitment statutes to include that phraseology. The term delinquent child, as I said, is separately defined in the statute, and it's only used a few times in the course of Title 16.1, and it's nowhere used in the course of the commitment statutes. The code is very clear that it relates to a juvenile. And it's not, it makes sense in a way that the legislature and the code, when we read this harmoniously together, that they intend for adults to be treated differently than juveniles. What the statutes are saying is that under 16.1.284, which is the statute, of course, mainly at issue in this case, that when an adult has been adjudicated delinquent for an offense that was committed prior to him reaching adulthood, there's only one sentencing alternative available to him.
Then why would the statute, if that were the case, why would the legislature have used the word may? It seems that they're suggesting that there are alternatives there.
And that, of course, brings us to the issue in assignment, the first assignment of error, which is whether the trial court erred in finding that the word may gave the trial court some discretion. And in this case, Your Honor, I would point the court to case law, as particularly the Chesapeake versus Pulliam case, which I believe is cited in both the Commonwealth's brief and our petition, that the word may, while ordinarily suggesting discretion, is to be construed as mandatory when it's necessary to accomplish legislative intent. And in this case, our argument is that the discretion granted under the statute to the trial court with respect to the term may is whether or not the trial court sees fit to impose a period of incarceration between 0 and 12 months in jail, whether the trial court sees it fit to exercise in its discretion a probationary period or to impose a fine. And that's consistent with the language that's used elsewhere in the Virginia Code. Other sentencing statutes contain the word may. Virginia Code section 18.2-22, which discusses conspiracies to commit felonies. There's language in there that says that a person found guilty of this shall be confined, and then it goes and lists that range. But it also says, or in the discretion of the trial court, may be confined in jail not exceeding 12 months and fined not exceeding $500, either or both. And I think the best way to compare that is the plea forms that we typically see on felony cases. The plea forms for a grand larceny case, for example, when it talks about the minimum and maximum range of punishment, we typically see a minimum amount of incarceration is 1 year, the maximum is 20 years, but then the plea form goes on to say that in the discretion of the judge, it may include a period of incarceration up to 12 months. The word may there is not speaking to the trial court's ability to sentence outside of the statute. That's not the discretion that's authorized by may, if that's how this court interprets it. The word may is the discretion granted to it by the statute's own words, by the singular statute's own words and the statutory scheme that's present. In this case, the trial court was without authority and did not have discretion to impose a sentence not contemplated under 16.1-284. That code section does not state anywhere that an adult who is adjudicated delinquent may be sentenced or committed to the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Isn't the way that we can resolve this, and it's interesting to discuss the terminology that's used, but when I was a juvenile court judge a while back, and something that I learned that might be helpful here is that when you're talking about a delinquent child or a delinquent juvenile, you're talking about a status, the status of an individual. While when you're talking about juveniles, you're talking about those persons who are subject to the jurisdiction of the Juvenile or Domestic Relations Court. Might that explain why there is a different terminology used in the statute and why what the trial court did as it was sitting, in essence, as an individual, as a trial court that's sentencing a person who would have otherwise been a juvenile, who would have otherwise committed a delinquent act, is thereby can be sentenced under the code provision that has been provided for the circuit court to sentence?
And again, I'm not sure if I completely understand the question, so I'll attempt to answer. Mm-hmm. I think that the difference the court needs to draw in this case is that the commitment statutes clearly say that only a juvenile who is adjudicated delinquent. And if we apply the definition of juvenile to that sentence, it means a person less than 18 years of age may be committed. I understand that when we're talking about delinquency and a juvenile is found to be delinquent, it's
a status.
A status on
mm-hmm.
them. But the delinquent child, as defined under 16.1.228, is not the phrasing and is not the terminology that's used in the commitment statutes. And that is the plain language, and that's what controls here. I believe that when we're talking about whether or not a juvenile who has committed an offense prior to turning 18, turned 18, pled guilty, and is sentenced, 16-1-284 is the only available dispositional statute. And that makes sense in a way when we consider that the juvenile court's authority over individuals ends when they turn 18 and they commit an offense, right? So when an adult commits an offense on their 18th birthday, they are then sent to the general district court. The juvenile court no longer has jurisdiction. So there's already a structure in place in our criminal justice system to treat adults differently than juveniles. And so a code section such as 16-1-284, which provides for a different sentencing option than what's been previously available to juveniles, falls in line.
But under the Presley case, it says 16.1284, nothing in Code Section 16.1-284 limits the juvenile court to sentencing an adult who's committed an offense before attaining the age of 18 to the penalties which are authorized to be imposed on adults for such violations. Would you agree?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the...
Under the Presley case, nothing in Code Section 16.1-284 limits the juvenile court to sentencing an adult who has committed an offense before attaining the age of 18, quote, to the penalties which are authorized to be imposed on adults for such violations.
And I think if I understand the quote, it means that a juvenile who committed an offense and has since turned 18 is not subject to the full range of statutory punishment available to an adult if they had committed the offense at 18 years of age. So, for example, grand larceny again, if an adult had committed the offense of grand larceny, the range is 0 days in jail to 20 years in jail. But for a juvenile, even if they commit a felony offense and are sentenced after turning 18 years of age, the maximum penalty authorized under the law is 12 months in jail. I don't know if that quite addresses the court's question.
I think I see what you're saying. If we had a situation where this individual was 17 years of age and hadn't turned 18, what penalties could the court have imposed?
If the juvenile was found guilty at 17?
Yes.
If the juvenile was 17 at the time that he was adjudicated delinquent, I believe any of the dispositions under 16.1-278.8 apply.
And how long could that person be sent to the Department of Juvenile Justice?
Up till the 21st birthday.
Okay, so what's the difference that the person now has turned 18?
The fact that he's turned 18 and he's no longer a juvenile under the plain language of the statute. And when we talk about this idea that we're talking about on the day before their 18th birthday, if they're found guilty, they can still go to the Department of Juvenile Justice. But the next day, if they're sentenced and the trial court is prohibited from entering an order sending them to the Department of Juvenile Justice, the Commonwealth would have you believe that that leads to an absurd result, that that doesn't quite make sense because there are adults housed at the Department of Juvenile Justice. But again, that gets back to the very issue that juveniles are treated differently than adults, and juveniles are eligible for commitment. And if you have pled guilty as a juvenile, you can still be committed. In this case,
So your view would be that it is the date of offense that controls rather than the date of sentencing?
If a juvenile, I believe a fair reading of the statutes under all of the commitment statutes, if someone is less than 18 years of age and is found guilty, they are eligible for commitment. If someone pleads guilty to an offense committed as a juvenile, but after they turn 18 years of age, so they're an adult at the plea, then they are prohibited from being committed to the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Okay.
And if the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Curtis Dale on behalf of the Commonwealth again.
Yes, sir.
The purpose of statutory interpretation is to divine what the legislative intent was. I think looking at 16.1, the juvenile code in its total, the purpose of the code is to find a way to treat those individuals who are adjudicated delinquent prior to reaching the age of 18. The code section is meant to be remedial. It's meant to have rehabilitative qualities to it. And the juvenile court has given a great number of options available to it to achieve those goals. I think the interpretation Mr. Charlizano is trying to force on the code section greatly limits those options to the juvenile court, which would greatly hamper its ability to do the legislative intent of finding out what's the remedial rehabilitative actions which are necessary. The circumstance of whether you can get to disposition prior to the defendant turning 18, you have one set of options versus if you, there's a continuance or falls on a birthday, so he's now 18, you only have one sentencing option available to it. That seems somewhat absurd given the complexity of the juvenile code, given the fact that juveniles, childs, minors are all basically identified the same under the age of 18. Delinquent child is defined as someone who's adjudicated delinquent prior to reaching the age of 18.
It's a status.
Correct. And clearly Mr. Charlizano was a delinquent child. He's a delinquent juvenile. He's a delinquent minor. However phrasing you want to use it, that's what he was when he was sentenced. As such, he's subject to all the range of penalties the court may deem appropriate at the dispositional hearing. Indeed,
why would the General Assembly use the words child, juvenile, and minors interchangeably? If they're using different words, don't we need to look for different meaning?
There's three ways of saying the same thing. Why they did it, I don't know. Is it helpful when they do that? No.
Because they've never done a comprehensive review of the juvenile code? Yes.
The fundamental issue is there's no substantive difference between being a delinquent child or a delinquent juvenile or a delinquent minor. All of them have been able to deal with someone being under the age of 18 who's adjudicated delinquent for an act that would be a felony or misdemeanor committed by an adult. That's what they are. And that's what Mr. Charlizano was. That's what the code is designed to address individuals of that status. And the code itself, 16.1.278.8, which is titled Delinquent Juveniles, one of the dispositional options listed in that, which is A15, I believe it is 16.1.284, which is the one that's argued and applies only to adults. But it's under a code section titled Delinquent Juveniles. So is the code consistent? No. But when looking at what the purpose of the whole thing is there for, it's designed to address those issues which are unique to juveniles. And they are treated differently, and they're treated differently for a reason. Generally, there's a prohibition against putting juveniles in a jail. That's something that's generally prohibited. Unless they've turned 18, then okay, the court might find that to be a better rehabilitative measure than sending them to Department of Juvenile Justice. Because spending a couple weeks in the local jail might be more of an impetus that person needs than spending 2 or 3 years at the Department of Juvenile Justice. That's why trial judges have discretion. That's why there's a large number of options available in these cases. For adults, it's either jail or no jail, probation, no probation. Juveniles are given a great number of tools to correct the issues before they become serious adult offenders. That's why the code is there. That's why Mr. Travisano is subject to all of the sections under 16.1278, because those are the options the General Assembly feels are appropriate to give to a juvenile who's adjudicated delinquent in order to be rehabilitative and remedial. And the code itself says it's remedial. It should be liberally construed. So I think discrepancies in nomenclature aside, they all mean the same thing. It would be helpful if the General Assembly went back and said exactly the same thing every time they said it, but they didn't. Does that mean they meant something different? I find it hard to believe that they intended some type of absurd result because it was a delinquent child once and then never used it again in the code, that somehow it means something completely different than a delinquent juvenile or a delinquent minor. It just doesn't make sense for what the purpose of the code is there for. And again, as the court pointed out, 16.1.284 says may. That's the quintessential discretionary function. You can't get more discretionary than that. And to adopt Mr. Charlizano's interpretation, you're basically saying what the code actually says, and that interpretation would be the court may sentence someone possibly between 0 and 12 months. I mean, if that's what the court intended, if that was what the legislature intended, it could be to say you shall sentence him to whatever class one misdemeanor is, which is 0 to 12 months. we don't need the sentence ranges built into what the definition of misdemeanor is. It becomes redundant, unnecessary. We don't want to interpret statutes to make words unnecessary. It's there for a reason. Because the clear intent of the legislature was to address people and mission drivers on his position, his status. Because he is a delinquent child, a delinquent minor, a juvenile, however you want to say that, the court did not err in sentencing him under 16-1278. And as such, I would have to answer the questions the court may have, and we ask the court to affirm.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything in rebuttal? A few minutes.
Your Honor, again, all that I would state in rebuttal is that under 16-1-278.8, which, as counsel indicated, is titled Delinquent Juveniles, that does contain a provision that a juvenile who has been found guilty may be sentenced under 16-1-284. And that arises in situations where a juvenile is found guilty but then reaches adulthood at sentencing. In this case, though, it's very different. Gerson was only 18 years old, not only when he pled guilty, but when he was found guilty and adjudicated delinquent. And so that's why it's our position that 16-1-284 is the only dispositional statute available. He's precluded from being sentenced under the other dispositional statutes because those all refer to juveniles. And he most certainly was not at the time.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. The matter has been submitted. Well, case of the day, Marie.